First impressions are important. We kind of get an idea of who someone is when we see them for the very first time. In those first 30 seconds, it kind of defines how we see that person and interact with them, how we take them in, and it can shape the entire relationship. Superman is no different. So this is how Metropolis and the world is introduced to Superman for the very first time. And so you see, he uses his incredible powers to save Lois Lane, to catch the helicopter, and everyone is cheering for him. Everyone is clapping and waving, and everyone looks happy and joyful. That was the 1978 version. In 2013, there was a remake of Superman that was called Man of Steel, and they took kind of a different approach, and it was more the idea of, would we really be happy to see someone with these incredible powers? And they actually take the angle that, at least Superman himself is kind of afraid, if I reveal myself, if I show people what I can do, what if they're afraid of me? And during the end of the movie, as he's using his powers to fight the supervillain, the town or the city of Metropolis goes through incredible damage. And so everyone's running away. And the question is, are the people more afraid of Superman than they are in awe of him? So instead of cheering for him, are they running away? It's kind of an interesting idea when you think about it. So if we were to see someone do the things that Superman could do, would we cheer for him or would we be afraid? Another remake that took place not long ago was a remake of Carrie. And Carrie is a horror movie about a girl who is able to move things with her mind, with the power of telekinesis. And as a promotion for this movie, some actors actually staged a prank in a local coffee shop where they rigged somebody on wires and pulleys and hired some actors and an actress. So this girl pretended that she had the ability to move things and people. And so, of course, all these people are coming in to get their coffee, as they do every day, and they see this argument happening between this girl and this guy, and she reaches out her hand, and with the harness and the wires rigged on him, he's pulled back up against the wall. Now, of course, everybody at the coffee shop thinks that this is really happening. And guess what? They're not cheering. They're in terror. It was a beautiful prank, but it really asked the question, what would we do if we saw someone with extraordinary abilities? Would we cheer for them? Would we scream at them? Would we follow them? So remember, as we are in the season of Lent, as we are in this series, try to remember, or try to think, try to imagine, what would it be like to meet Jesus for the very first time? If we knew nothing about him, if we had never gone to church, if we had never heard the stories, if we had never seen the paintings, if we had never seen or heard of this guy ever, and then maybe we find ourselves walking that path to Emmaus, and we see these two guys walking along very slowly, very solemnly, just looking utterly in despair and depression, and asking them what's wrong, and they say that their follower or their leader, their mentor, their teacher, their Lord has died. And we might ask the question, well, who was he? And we get the answer in the form of a story, almost like the first season of a new series. And then in hearing that story and hearing everything that Jesus did, everything who he was, everything that he taught, everything that happened to him, everything that he gave, what would we do with all of that? Because the reality is, in order to follow, before we can follow Jesus, we first must know who he is. So we find ourselves in season one. In episode one, we look back at his baptism, how it is that he, representing God, God incarnate, went through the act of receiving the sacrament that we call baptism. And then immediately after that, leaving everyone, leaving the world, leaving society, and going to a mysterious and dangerous place known as the wilderness. And being there for 40 days and starving and thirsty, being tempted by the enemy, being tempted to use his very own power for himself. And in the midst of that, really trying to figure out maybe for himself, who am I as God has created me to be? So now we get to the part in the story where we hear Jesus coming back into the world, Jesus coming back into society. And the first thing that he does is he approaches some fishers. So just imagine being in your own place of work, or maybe just being in your own place of life, doing the things that we normally do each and every day, things that maybe we could do in our sleep because we've done them so many times, whether we like them or not. And then seeing this stranger come to us and saying, drop everything that you're doing and follow me. Would we really do that? I mean, would we really follow this person that we've just seen for the first time? Hey, drop what you're doing. Let's go over here. Come where I am. Can anyone say stranger danger? I mean, that's what we're taught, right? You don't talk to strangers. You don't follow strangers. You don't go somewhere with a strange person. And yet these grown men drop everything that they have, everything that they own, all because this stranger, he doesn't even say what his name is. All he says is, follow me. And they do it. Why? It doesn't make any sense. Why would these grown men, whose life literally depends on bringing in fish, why would they just drop everything and follow him? Why does this work so much? Well, maybe we find out, or maybe we get a glimpse in the story. Walking along the beach of Lake Galilee, Jesus saw two brothers, Simon, later called Peter, and Andrew. They were fishing, throwing their nets into the lake. It was their regular work. Jesus said to them, come with me. I'll make a new kind of fisher out of you. I'll show you how to catch men and women instead of perch and bass. They didn't ask questions, but simply dropped their nets and followed. A short distance down by the beach, they came upon another pair of brothers, James and John, Zebedee's sons. These two were sitting in a boat with their father Zebedee, mending their fish nets. Jesus made the same offer to them, and they were just as quick to follow, abandoning boat and father. This was their livelihood. Not just economically, but also communally. See, they not only gave up their careers, they not only gave up their jobs, they gave up their families to follow this person who doesn't even say what his name is. A popular theologian and writer by the name of Diana Butler Bass recently wrote a devotion a couple months ago about this very story and reminds us one of the key pieces of this is these fishers are fishing for the empire. They're fishing in the empire, the Roman Empire, which means they are fishing for the empire. So everything that they do, everything that they catch, the money that they make, it's not theirs. It goes to the empire. And so there's this emphasis on these individuals being Israelites, hearkening back to a legacy of slavery. That even though they may be out of Egypt, they are still living the same kind of life that they did hundreds of years ago. In the Ten Commandments, the longest one is the fourth. And it's the commandment that says, remember where you were, but know where you are now. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Why? Because you're getting to the point where you're still thinking and acting like you're identified by the work that you do. You're still living as though you're being forced to do all these things and you're forgetting God once again. So you need to stop thinking as though your life and your work are the same thing. You're no longer slaves. Take the whole day to remember that. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. It was to remind them that slavery was not their identity. Follow me, Jesus says, and I will help you fish, not for fish. I will help you fish, not for the empire. I will help you fish for people. So there is a systemic social justice component to it, and that is important. That is part of Jesus starting this revolution, going against the norm, going against the empire, going against the system, and introducing himself to this crowd who has been treated like slaves once again, and saying they don't have to be a part of this corrupt system. But there's something else. Something that is maybe deeper. Something that is maybe more powerful. And maybe this is why they made the decision. So as you hear this story again, I want to invite you, as you're able, to stand. You don't have to if you don't want to. Maybe for those who are worshiping online, it might be easier because we can't see you. But for those who want to, I just invite you to stand. I invite you to hold out your arms. Just hold them out. Don't bump into anyone. And I want you to hear this story again. Walking along the grass of Lake Morton, Jesus saw you. Jesus saw you throwing your nets out into the lake again and again and again, over and over and over. Because it was your work. It was your life. And Jesus said to you, come with me. I'll make a new fisher out of you. I will show you how to catch people instead. Can we imagine how heavy and how dirty those nets must have been? How hard and how heavy and how calloused our hands have become from doing the same thing over and over and over, exhausted with no end, no getting out, no getting ahead, maybe one paycheck away. The strain of holding all of this together all day, every day, no end in sight. Do we know what it's like to hold something heavy for an extended period of time, maybe even a lifetime? And then here comes this stranger who is God incarnate, the Word made flesh, who comes into our life, who comes into our work and recognizes how long our arms have been held out, straining, holding everything, maybe everyone together, how everything is rested on our shoulders. How God incarnate says, let go. It's okay to let go. Follow me and I'll take you somewhere else. Would we cheer? Would we scream? Would we follow? Would we let go? Now, how alluring does that simple statement sound? You can be seated. Now, does it make sense? Does it resonate? That this person who came out of nowhere speaks to us, looks at us as though he has known us our entire lives? How many of us would feel the invitation to drop what has weighed us down for so long just because someone said we could out loud? That's who Jesus is. The one who tells us that we can drop whatever it is that we have kept up for so long. The one who says we can set down everything that has forced us to live this life that doesn't represent who we are. The one who comes out of nowhere and tells us we can go in a new direction. That's who Jesus is. And that's the first impression that he gives to the fishers, to the disciples, to the world, and to us. Is that someone we would follow? Because the path has taken us here. It has taken us to this place in the middle of a long and arduous journey. A journey that sometimes feels like it has no end. A journey that may have felt exciting in the beginning, but now that we've really gotten into the thick of it, and we see how much more there is to go, and we're maybe uncertain how much longer there is to go. We're not sure that we can make it. But here comes Jesus in the midst and says, follow me. Why would the fishers choose to follow Jesus? Why would they choose to drop everything that they knew, everything that they had to follow this stranger? Because Jesus wasn't a stranger. Jesus saw them for who they were, and thus they saw him for who he is, and they chose to drop all of that stuff and finally be who they were supposed to be. They came as fishers, but they left as disciples. We are given that same invitation, not only now, not only in the season of Lent, but in all seasons of our life, to drop all those things that have been placed upon us and fully live into who we are supposed to be. That is the difference between being fishers and being disciples. So that when Jesus says, follow me, all we have to do is let go. And he does the rest. And we follow alongside and we share his story. So may we go as followers and share the story and the love of Jesus Christ. And may we go in peace. Amen.